All right, good afternoon. It is 3 o'clock on March 16th, and we're doing Chem 12BL, and we're going to talk about chemical equivalents today. So I was just going to start a screen share. And get us up and running. All right, screen share looks successful. Now, if I can just find the Zoom window, it is the gallery view. There we go. And then it would also be nice to see the chat. Got it. Okay. Everything appears to be working as it should be. Okay, can you guys see the screen? Everything look okay on the screen? And we're going to do chemical equivalents. This idea of chemical equivalents is important for a number of different reasons. It's important in more than just NMR. It comes into play in understanding the different positions in a molecule, even just in synthesis. Sometimes it's important to understand chemical equivalence. So what we're looking at is, I'm trying to think where I started this morning. Let's start here. This is where we left off in lecture. In looking at the protons and carbons in a molecule, and understanding that the protons and carbons in a molecule can be in different environments. And that some, by symmetry, are in the same environment and others are not. So on the left-hand molecule, what I can do is I can look at the number of, we just call them environments, but what we mean by environments is the number of chemical environments. And we'll do the same over here. And we look at the protons and the carbons. And so what we recognize is that about sigma bonds, there is free rotation about the sigma bonds. And so given the free rotation about the sigma bonds, the protons that are here, while being enantiotopic, is the way that we would refer to these two protons, meaning that if I replace the proton with something, I create one stereocenter. If I replace the other proton, I create the other stereocenter. So these two protons are enantiotopic as a way of describing them, but they sit in the same chemical environment that by rotation of the sigma bond, they each sweep past the bromine and they each see the same thing. They each see the bromide and the two hydrogens and they see them equally. And so these two protons, I can label them both as proton A. They are in the same environment, these guys. B, same environment, and these guys, C, the same environment, that there are three different types of hydrogen that are in the first molecule. And I can label them with color to be able to distinguish them even a little bit more. And so I've got those three different types of hydrogen. I can further take the molecule and look at the number of chemical environments there are for the carbons. So if I take, I'm just going to slide this down. If I take and redraw the molecule again, just in its bond line formula, then it's pretty easy to see that I have a difference in the style of carbons that I have, or the chemical environments for the carbons that I have as well, that there are three different types. For the molecule on the right-hand side, that molecule has HA, 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 those three are the same as these three over here. By symmetry, the molecule is the same on its left-hand side and its right-hand side. And that there is only one other style of proton, oops, should be an HB. That's that guy. And that I can label one type of carbon and the other one are identical. And so what I have is I have on the left, three different types of protons, three different types of carbon. And on the right, I have two different types of proton and two different types of carbon. And so these are the number of chemical environments. And while it looks like the number of carbons and hydrogens would be the same, because in these two simple molecules, they are the same, they are not the same in every molecule. So that as I look at different molecules, I will find that I will have different numbers of carbons and different numbers of hydrogens. So let's do another molecule and have you guys tell me how many different types of carbon and how many different types of hydrogen. Okay, so here's the molecule that we want to investigate, and we want to know the number of environments. And this is both for hydrogen and for carbon. So we'll take this molecule and I'll actually copy it, paste it over here so that we can do it twice. All right, you guys want to use the chat? See if you can figure out how many different types of hydrogen there are. Do a little bit of active work here. Give me a second to work through it. Sperling's got four for hydrogen. Okay, so what you want to do is the first thing is just label out the hydrogens. And then after labeling out the hydrogens, go through and where there is free rotation about a sigma bond, label all of the protons that are on the sigma bond that has free rotation the same. So let's start off with these as A. And then I'll even give those a color to further distinguish them. So there's one set. Then we also have the proton that is on the same carbon with the oxygen. And that one's a little bit different. So that one's HB. So we'll color that one in a different color. We then have the proton which is on the oxygen. That proton is different and unique. So that one is HC. And then as BB noted that the double bond is not equal. There is not free rotation about a double bond. The alkene is locked. And because the alkene is locked, the hydrogen that is up here will always be next to the hydroxyl group and on the same side as the hydroxyl group, and always be on the same side with the methyl. The hydrogen, which is down here, is on the same carbon with the methyl, but directly next to the oxygen, and will always be directly next to the oxygen in that way. So these two hydrogens are unique and different. They are D and E. And the last three, because of the rotation about the sigma bond, are all equivalent, and they are all F. So I need enough colors to be able to try to like highlight all these out. But you can see, one more color, maybe fancy pink. You can see that I go up through F. So I've got A is 1, B 2, C 3, D 4, E 5, F 6. So there's a total of 6, actually, in terms of the number of environments in that molecule. Counting out the carbon environments is a little bit easier. So the carbon environments, and if you don't have enough color, and if you're struggling to keep up with color, here's another way to do it. Label them A, B, C, D, and E, and F. That's one way. Another way is on the carbons to circle each carbon, which is unique. And so I don't have to go through with color. I can just actually circle each of the unique carbons. And if there are carbons that are in the same chemical environment, then I can circle them together. And go ahead, Stephen.
Sorry, I don't want to interrupt too much, but before I got lost, the carbons involved in the double bond, the hydrogens involved in those are different. It's HE and HD. Those are different because of the fact that one is closer to a carbon that's going to be partially positive due to the hydroxyl group. Is that why?
The chemical environments, the micro environments are different. The oxygen serves as an electron withdrawing group and does make a bigger partial positive on the carbon that HD sits on than on the carbon that HE sits on. HE actually has a methyl group which is slightly electron donating. And so this hydrogen sits on a carbon which has a little more shielding on it. And they're different. They're unique.
Okay, sweet. I just wanted to make sure I got the reasoning right.
Yeah. And the only time that they're going to be identical is when they're identical by symmetry, meaning this is a methyl on the right, this is a methyl on the left, but what those methyls are attached to are vastly different electron withdrawing groups. And so they will be in their own microenvironments. And so not even methyls won't be the same unless they are the same by symmetry. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 different carbon environments. And here we can say that the carbon environments are different than the proton environments. So this skill set of being able to figure out how many chemical environments there are in a molecule is really is a critical skill set, which is why I like to focus on it for a little bit. All right, let me give you another one. Let's start off with something symmetrical. Let's do that. And let's figure out the number of environments for both the carbon and the proton. And for now, I really do recommend drawing them all out. It just makes it a whole lot easier to start with. And for the carbons, then I make all the hydrogens go away because that's easier to deal with that way. Now, this one we need to be careful with because of symmetry. So the aldehyde proton is HA. HB, and HB. The two protons that are on the left-hand side and the right-hand side are the same because of free rotation about the sigma bond. They equilibrate out. And HC and HC, those guys are the same because of symmetry and the sigma bond down at the bottom that equilibrates out. And then we have D, D, and D. So A1, B2, C3, D4, there's four different types of environments. Okay, then when we go to the right-hand side, again, I like to circle. Oops. But we can use color to denote these out as well. So circling is one way to see it. Color is yet another way. So I could say that, say I use blue for the top, so I'll grab blue. This guy, I didn't give a color. Oops. But that carbon is unique. I then have these two carbons. And those two. And then that guy that's there. And then lastly, I've got the dark green out here. And so it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So I've got six in that one. Is everybody following?
The carbons were in the last one. Was it five?
Five.
Awesome.
Okay, so is that one making sense in terms of symmetry and how symmetry is working on an aromatic ring? We tend to do a lot of aromatic rings. Aromatic rings tend to be one of our sort of go-to places. Let's look at this one. All right, do the carbons and the protons. Do the protons first. Let me know when you got it. All right, DB's got six for the number of protons. So I've got the protons labeled out there. Each of those are HA that are on that methyl. And then as we come into the ring, this proton is unique. Oops, so that would be B, C, D, E, and these three are F. So what winds up happening is the ones that are on sigma bonds that can have free rotation, those are all equivalent to each other, but not between the two methyls. So there's those guys. And then on the ring positions are unique and the ring gives different protons in each location. So all the protons on the ring are unique in and of themselves. Let's see, and I need the last one. I'll do that. And so we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, total of 6. Spot on. Okay, the number of carbons. Now here, like I said, circling is a great way to be able to deal with the number of carbons. We could choose a different color to be able to circle with. There's 1, there's 2, there's 3, there's 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. They're all unique in this one. And you can see now that the more problems that we do, we find that the number of carbons and the number of protons really do not match up, that there always seems to be a disparity between the number of protons and the number of hydrogens, with the number of carbons, excuse me, the number of protons and the number of carbons. The number of carbons typically tend to be more because we have certain carbons that don't have any hydrogens on them. And so those carbons that don't have hydrogens on them count as extra chemical environments for those guys.
Okay. Sorry for just another interruption, but so when you look at things like really long like fats or carboxylic acids, you know, kind of like maybe in the phospholipid bilayer, right?
Yeah.
Is there a number of carbons away from like a polarizing group or a group that's changing the shielding? Like, is there like, cause is there a count away from them that will like be a threshold where those carbons or hydrogens are basically in the same environment, right? Kind of like how like something can become like polar or nonpolar.
What's the field strength of the magnet?
Right. So if it's like an ion, you said would dissolve like 40 to 50 carbons, right?
Well, so your question, my question is yes. As we get farther and farther away from the electron withdrawing group, it seems as though the chemical environments get closer and closer together such that they start to overlap. And my question to you is, what is the strength of the magnet? Are we using a 90 megahertz magnet or are we using a gigahertz magnet? If we're using a 90 megahertz magnet, then the difference here in how far away I get from the electron withdrawing group into the point where these guys start to look the same, maybe that's 4 carbons. But if I'm on a gigahertz magnet, I don't think it matters how many carbons I go out. They're all going to be different chemical environments, and you're going to be able to see them all distinctly as individuals, and they won't start overlapping for 20 carbons or more.
Wow.
So the chemical environments, the difference in the number of chemical environments is that they are different. It's just, is your magnetic strength strong enough to be able to create a difference that you can actually see it? So it depends on the magnet.
Cool, that makes sense. Strength.
Okay. For all the small stuff that we're doing, if they are in a different environment, then you will be able to see them for all the small molecules that we're doing. We're not gonna do anything that has a super long chain in it where they're essentially gonna resolve into the same chemical environment. Although what I will say is that sometimes protons that are in one area of a molecule and another area of a molecule that may look vastly different for odd reasons may fall in the same chemical environment and overlap on top of each other just from dumb luck, just because that's just the way it is, that the electron withdrawing groups create an identical field in a location that they happen to fall on the same spot, even though they're not related to one another at all. And that can happen. And it's just unfortunate when it does. All right. Let me ask you about this one real quick then, since we're doing things like this. Give me the number of protons and carbons in this guy. Number of environments. So the reason I'm spending more time on this, oh, Mary's on a different one. The reason I'm spending more time on this is because this is how important this is, that I feel that the ability to be able to look at a molecule and to be able to structurally analyze it, to figure out how many chemical environments, I think is a critical skill to understanding NMR. That I don't think that you can really adequately solve an NMR problem if you cannot understand chemical equivalence and recognize it and be able to do it fairly quickly. So I think that this is a fairly important skill set that I want you to be able to do. All right, how many protons? How many hydrogen environments do we have? BB's been analyzing it. 7 with a question mark, an uncertain question mark. There's uncertainty there. I want an exclamation mark. There we go. That's what I want. That's what I want. Okay. Anybody else want to concur or disagree? All right, Pokey's got 7 and 10 for carbon. Kendra's got 7. Ashley's got 7. All right, let's see what we got. The molecule is not symmetrical. So everything here should be unique. We've got A, B, C, D, E. Each of these guys can be F. And then we've got to decide about these. This is the tricky part. And what you need to realize about these is that there's no rotation and that this proton will always be facing the ring and this proton will always be facing away from the ring. And that makes these two protons different. So EFG and H. So proton HH. These are all unique. And so that gives us 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That actually gives us 8. And so what happens here is most people see these and look at these as being the same, but because there's restricted rotation, they're actually different. So that's a hard one to get until you understand how double bonds function. And I'll give you a little thing in a second. We'll look at double bonds specifically. And I'll try to highlight it out for you and show you what to expect. I'm going to run out of colors. So I'll use brown. And maybe we need 2 more. Teal color and maybe this purple. Okay, so there's the 8. I'll highlight it out. For the carbons are easier. The carbons, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. And there's a total of 10 in the number of carbons. So that's the carbon number. Okay, let's look at double bonds specifically and how we look at things that have cis geometry, trans geometry, geminal geometry. If these groups are the same, so you have R and R, and the groups are identical, then the protons will be identical because the protons will be in the same chemical environment. But the R groups have to be the same for that to be true. If you change the R groups, then what winds up happening, so let's do R prime and R. Now we get HA and HB, and they are no longer equivalent. So now we get A's and B's, and it breaks the symmetry. HB is always next to R prime, HB next to R prime, HB next to R prime, where HA is always next to R. HA next to R, whoops, R over here, and HA next to R over here. And so and there's no free rotation about it. And in fact, here's one more concept. It's a great concept. If you have a terminal double bond and you have R here, then what you have is you have a system where you have HA, HB, and HC, and they are all unique. And you have three different chemical environments on that terminal double bond, just like that. Okay.
Jason, could you scroll up just a sec?
Is that far enough?
Yeah, I got it.
Okay. And so you got to watch the double bonds with chemical environments. That's one thing to watch. Let me ask another question then. What about this molecule? What do you think about this one? What are you guys thinking? Six. Even with free rotation, up will always be up. Well, let me do it down here. Let's take our molecule. Let's make our molecule flat. The hydroxyl group is up. The methyl group is down. And remember that this thing exists conformationally in cis and trans conf, or not cis and trans, in chair conformations. so that I have the methyl and the alcohol axial, which places these protons equatorial. And I then have different axial and equatorial protons that are all over this molecule. And that when this goes through its ring flip conformation, that those all rotate, they all flip. And that the hydroxyl group then goes equatorial, and the proton here goes axial. And that each one of these is actually a discrete chemical environment. There's actually like 24 different chemical environments. And that you can see the different conformations in the NMR because the protons in those different conformations actually make different chemical environments, and that on a strong enough NMR, you would see them all. On a weaker NMR, they would sort of merge into multiplets and you would get these mushy multiplets that would be hard to distinguish. But on a strong NMR, they would all be unique chemical environments and you would get something like 24 proton environments in going through this. So each thing would be unique. It would be 1, 2, 3, another for the methyl, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 12 total for each ring, which takes you to 24. The carbon environment's not quite as bad because the carbon environments don't change as much from axial to equatorial. So the carbon environments would be here, would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. We'd have 7 different carbon environments. But the number of proton environments gets ugly. So I tend not to give you 6-membered ring systems. We tend not to use 6-membered ring systems most of the time when we're looking at NMR just because they're so complicated that for a beginning student, a 6-membered ring system is just an ugly thing to have to deal with. It's not very pretty. And so what we can do is I can give you problems to solve and ask you to tell me which NMR fits which structure without having you know anything about carbon NMR. And you can most of the time sort it out. I'm trying to see if I can pull out some simple ones. Let me give you an example. If I can think of one off the top of my head. Where I want to go. I hadn't set this out ahead of time, so I need to think about it as I'm doing it. And that's too high. Oh, snap in. Okay, so this is the proton NMR. And I'm going to make up some numbers here because I don't have the NMR specifically to give you. So let me tell you that this is about 1.0. About 3.3. These guys are each at about 2.1, 2.0. And maybe this last one at about 1.4. And I want to know which compound seems to fit the NMR better. And because this is proton NMR, I'll give you the integrations that this is 1 to 3 to 2 to 2 to 3. And this is compound A and compound B. And which compound seems to fit the spectrum better? If I did that right in my head. All right, BB says B, Sterling says B. So there's a couple of different ways to attack it. One way is to sit down with the compounds and to look at the number of chemical environments in each of the compounds. So if we take and we look at the number of environments, what we'll see is that these are a number of hydrogen environments. We've got A, we've got B. As we go through and we look at it, the hydrogens that are here, of which there are three, we've got one that is here, we've got one that's here. And then we've got these guys out here. So this molecule, these are all HAs, HB, C, and then all of these are D. And by free rotation, all of these are D. So what I've got is I've got 1, 2, 3, 4 different types for A. And for B, molecule B, if I go through and label them, these guys are all unique. And so these are A out on the end. This one is B, C, D, and finally E. And so out here, what I've got is I've got these guys, that guy, HC, HD, and then finally, what did I do? I need some other color. Maybe I'll use this deep purple. So I've got all of those guys. So I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. So there's a difference in the number of environments, between 4 and 5. And the number of environments in here is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's 5 environments in my spectrum. So that's going to match my 5 environments in my compound. That's going to match B. Now, there's more that I can do than just that. So we would say that this guy with its 5 environments is matching the 5 environments in the spectrum. So that's one way to do it. The other way to do it is to take a look and to say how many of each type of proton there are. So in looking at how many of each type of proton there are, when I look at the 3 that are the HAs, those 3 that are in the HAs are closer to the bromide than the 3 that are HEs. They're going to be farther downfield. This one here, I'm going to label it this way, HA. The one proton that is on the carbon with the bromide is going to be the farthest downfield. So HB, which I made red, is here. Then pulling away from the bromide, still fairly close to it, are these 2, which are HC. That's these guys right here. In a very similar environment to HA, notice that HA was 1 carbon away from the bromide, HC is 1 carbon away from the bromide. And so they're in a very similar sort of chemical environment, not identical, but similar. HD then is farther away. And finally, HE, the farthest away, the farthest upfield, the most shielded. And so it's the numbers, the integration values that are telling me too. 3 protons. 2 protons. 2 protons. 1, that 1 proton occurs there. And then 3, the 3 for that guy there. That allows me to be able to distinguish that. And what I should be able to do is I should be able to look at this molecule, molecule A, and I should be able to predict its spectrum as well. So let's take that and just predict its spectrum really quick. Let me copy that. And let me copy the spectrum. And then I will use it to help us visualize what HA would have looked like. Okay, so in HA, first let's get rid of all the color. I want to keep the lines for a second, because I want to try to keep things sort of similar. HB would be in its same place. It wouldn't really move much and it would integrate for 1. So HB would be sitting here. And then HAs wouldn't really change much either. And there would be 3 of them. HC, this guy here, is in a similar chemical environment to HA, but it would only be 1 proton. And so that is going to change and shrink and be close to that 2.0, but only integrate for 1. And so its pattern is going to change. And then what really changes are these guys out here, the HDs, because there's 6 of them. That goes away, and this line gets twice as tall. And those guys are HD. And it reduces down to the four environments with the different integration values. Does that help to see it a little bit and to see what we would expect for the two different molecules? Now, there is some NMR software that does allow me to be able to go in and show you some things. It's not the best. So the molecule that we were just looking at, and when I say not the best, I mean figuring out how to manipulate it, I still don't really know how to use it to the best. And my pencil doesn't work. Oh, it does. Ha ha ha. Okay, there's that molecule. And it's giving me a slightly different picture than what I had, but you can see the four chemical equivalents that I've got. And you can see how one of them is integrating for six, one of them is integrating for three, and two of them are integrating for one in terms of their size. So it's a little bit different than the picture that I had, because it took this guy and moved it over here. And I was just estimating. The program is estimating, but it's going to be a whole lot better at estimating than I am. Oops. So there it is. But it's still four chemical environments and ratios of 1:1:3:6. And that's what we're looking at. And so it's those ratios of how tall are the peaks and how many environments, that this is an intuitive way of analyzing NMR, a faster way that can be really useful before we start to learn about what environments correspond to what number, and before we start to learn about what's called splitting. Because the splitting, as we'll see, that these little peaks have different patterns with them. And the patterns tell you how many neighbors each one has. And so by knowing how many neighbors each one has, you can start to reconstruct the connectivity within the molecule, and you can build the molecule back. And so it's about learning those patterns of what those patterns look like. What does that pattern look like versus that little pattern over here, which is kind of a cool pattern. And understanding what these patterns are and how to rebuild these patterns and how to rebuild the molecule. And that's what we're going to start on Thursday. So this is about as much time as I wanted to spend on this. I just wanted to give you a good sort of introduction into chemical equivalence and being able to tell how many proton signals, how many environments. So when I say signals and environments, I'm using that same word, it's a word that I'm using to mean the same. Signals equals environments. And how many signals a molecule will give off is how many chemical environments that molecule has. And being able to do that for both the carbon and the proton is the entry level skill, the beginning skill that allows you to really start to track and follow NMR. And so that's what we need to do first. And then, as I said, Thursday, we start to go into spin-spin coupling. And that's where things get a little bit crazy. That's where it starts to get fun. Okay. Let's open it up for questions and see if you guys have any questions beyond sort of what I presented. And then this is as much as I wanted to do today, and then we'll let you guys go. Is anything coming up?
I just had a question about when we were going to turn in our last lab.
You mean the multi-step?
Yeah.
After spring break. It's going to take me a while. I still got to get those videos together, and I still got to find the strength in my back to be able to stand up here in front of the computer long enough to do it. So I don't think that's going to happen until after spring break. So that's kind of on hold, and you guys don't need to worry about that right now.
Okay, sweet. That sounds good.
Okay. And I'll give you, even when I release it, I'll give you enough time to be able to go through and process all that and write it. And so it's not, I'm not going to crush you with it either. Okay. Yeah. Fair, reasonable expectations. That's what we work on around here. That's what we pride ourselves on. All right. I'm going to go ahead and end the recording. If anybody has any questions beyond this, I would say go ahead and stay on the line, and I'm happy to answer some things. Otherwise, we're kind of easy rolling back into this and easy rolling into spring break, I think. Sort of my expectations right now.